started. Welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for being here. This is the City Council study meeting for the City of South Jordan. Today is Tuesday, April 1st. We've had a blizzard almost all day, and it is April 1st, no joke, 2025. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as mayor of the City of South Jordan with our outstanding City Council seated here. We're going to excuse Mr. McGuire tonight and look forward to being with him again soon, and thank all of our staff for being here. And we welcome everyone here, presenters, members of the public, those of you joining us here in person and online. We welcome all of you. Thank you for being here. All right, our invocation tonight will be by Councilmember Patrick Harris.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful that we have the opportunity to gather together. We're thankful for our mayor and all the work that she does on behalf of our city. We're thankful for the city council members and all the city staff that have prepared for this meeting. We're thankful for our guests as well. And please bless us as we bless the council and the mayor that we'll be able to make the best decisions that we can on behalf of the city. And we ask this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mr. Harris. Thank you. All right. Coordination, anybody have anything you would like to bring up?
I'd like to mention a meeting that Patrick and I were out, you know, and this isn't coordinating a future event, but it was the chamber thing where Lincoln Fillmore, who was the other guy that was there? Do you recall?
The legislative wrap-up?
Was it?
It doesn't matter who it was, actually, for my point. But yeah. But they talked about...
Niederhaus?
I don't think so. But anyway, they talked about how the state does budgeting. And they caught my attention, so I'm kind of mad about the budget, I think. But anyway, the thing that really caught my attention is he said that every year they review in depth 20% of the budget. So every 5 years, the whole budget is reviewed in depth. And so he had a name for it. I think it was like maybe zero-based budgeting or something like that. But he said they take a chunk of the budget and they assume that there's nothing budgeted for those activities or purposes or whatever it is. And they review in depth and then add each item back and see how that affects the budget, each item that they want to keep in the budget. And I was thinking about how we could do something like that in our city. And so I was thinking about, you know, we have priority-based budgeting, but if you were to say, well, okay, these are your, I think it's 7 priorities. I don't remember the exact number, but if you mention any of the priorities beyond, like public safety, and I'm not sure that's actually how we word it. You know, we word it differently. So any of the priorities beyond that, I would really be guessing about what's in that portion of the budget. You know, I mean, I don't really know, for example, and name any one of the other priorities. I don't know what the line items are that are under that portion of the budget, you know, and I feel like I look at the budget pretty carefully, but I don't really know what's there, you know, at a detailed level.
So you're talking about two philosophically different ways of approaching the budget. And when we do our priority-based budgeting based on the strategic priorities, we actually don't budget separately for each priority. Each program that we have is evaluated based on those 7 strategic priorities. So we look at
So we don't have a program that fits nicely into just one of
the priorities. Have a program called safety. We weigh all those factors against every program that we do. And we score those programs and how well they do that. So a program might touch safe communities, desirable open space, fiscal government. All of those are weighted as we evaluate those programs. So the stronger a score that a program has means it's touching all 7 of those areas.
Well, I mean,
so they're 2 philosophically different ways to approach the budget.
But here's what we could do along those lines, if the council was game for it, is we could divide up the budget into pieces and review a piece each year in depth so that we're seeing, because I'm not, you know, I don't see, for example, how Summerfest hits each year of those priorities. I don't know. And neither do I know how much revenue we make off from Summerfest and how much the cost is for Summerfest. I'm not against Summerfest. Trust me, I'm just picking one out of the air that I know, you know.
No. I think, and Sunil and Don can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way that we do our priority-based budgeting, we're actually doing the deep dive into all of our budget every year. We're doing the 100%
you
deep
guys
dive
are,
rather than 20%.
But we're not. As a council, the council is not doing the deep dive. And frankly, I think we are obliged to do that. At least in more depth than what we've been doing it, I think. And I'm not faulting you. I think we have a high level of trust.
Yeah. And when you say you want to do a deep dive, what? I mean, because we'll sit down, we'll go through all those spreadsheets that make up the priority-based budget and walk you through that if that's what you want to do.
Well, it's what I'd like to do is I'd like to look at each piece of the budget periodically.
When you
not
say
saying,
each piece, like each department, each, I'm trying to understand.
Well, even.
It would be easier if you were going to do something like that to do it by department.
Well,
I
and maybe.
By
and maybe,
principle,
yeah.
I think that that's kind of broad and goes over a lot of different areas.
Because you're talking two very different philosophies
about
the budget.
I like the priority-based budgeting. I mean, I like the idea that each activity that we have is hitting on some of our priorities. I like that.
Yeah, because if it's not, if the program or what we're doing doesn't touch those, we eliminate it.
Great.
And we rely on you guys to set those strategic priorities. Everything we do is geared around that end goal to bring about your vision. In some ways, I wish the state would adopt priority-based budgeting because they could find a lot more efficiencies in how they do things than doing the zero-based budgeting and making people come in and fight and argue for their portion of the budget. This way, you don't fight and argue. If your program doesn't support those priorities, it goes away.
Yeah, so I guess the thing that I would like to see is I would like to see some kind of a proposal from the staff on how we as a council could get a deep dive on the budget over a period of time and see how I don't know, the Trails program supports the different priorities and how much it costs us to do, you know, to run trails
and
stuff like that. And I'm sure you can, but we just haven't done it. And I don't think we should go that deep on the whole budget every year as a council. I think that would be too much.
As a staff, we do.
And that's great. But if the council could go deep on sections of it, pieces of it, and maybe it's a quarter of it or a 20% of it or something like that. I don't know. So we could go deep and we could say, hey, I know that the city play is costing us this much each year. And we're hitting these different priorities. You know, I have no idea how much the city play costs us. And I feel like I should know that. I feel like one of our most important responsibilities as council members is stewardship over those tax dollars. Mm-hmm. Those are sacred funds. And we have a high level of trust. And I'm not questioning that at all. I'm just feeling like I need more information in a systematic way somehow.
Yeah.
You know?
No, we can do it. Just as you guys are able to come in and sit down with Sunil and walk through deep details of everything, you can come in and sit down with Don and Katie, and we can walk you through very detailed analysis of every single program in the city, what it costs, what the staff costs are that are allocated to it, what strategic priorities are tied to that. Yeah, we can
walk you through that.
Well, and I don't know how my fellow council members feel like. I'm literally asking for more work for us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to start scheduling budget meetings in August. We'll walk you through every program.
Yeah.
And do 20% of the programs every year if you want.
Yeah, and I don't know what the right division is for us to handle it in a reasonable amount of time. You know,
it's
I have no idea.
Just over 200.
So there's 200 individual programs that we break down through priority-based budgeting. We can...
So maybe
whatever you guys want to do.
Maybe we do a piece of them each year, and we just get through it every 4 or 5 years or something like that. And I don't know. Maybe the right answer is staff puts together some kind of a proposal of, hey, here's a reasonable way to divide it up. And we can go deep on this section with the council each year, and you can see, you know, what these priorities are or these budget items are and how much they cost and how they're hitting our different priorities.
Yeah, we can show you how all those programs score, what are quartile one programs, 2, 3, and 4, which ones are federally mandated, which ones are state mandated, which ones we do just because they check these. We have all that broke out.
I'm sure you do. I have no doubt, Dustin. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah,
I feel we can
do that.
Like I'm not adequately informed.
Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to.
And I don't know if anybody else feels the same, but
yeah, I get you. I mean, I like the idea, and I think my preference would be is if we have that many, where we start is. Ones that aren't mandated, you know, that we could actually have some say and influence on. And I wouldn't want to start with the ones that we can't really
do
anything
about.
So if that's more information. That's like, I think that's just, if you just want that, anyone can just get that, you know.
Right.
But,
I mean,
but if there's
part of how they're scored too, you know, sometimes like a program like Summerfest isn't mandated.
Yeah.
But it has a high score because it checks so many other boxes.
Yeah.
So.
What I'm saying is as you're going through those couple hundred, I think you'd say, hey, this is federally mandated, state mandated, just so we know, and then just so and we pick the ones that where there aren't mandates on it, and we go through those as we're going through it. But
I like that.
Yeah.
And it might be worth too before we nail down a path. Maybe we sit down and walk you through and show you what that all is, because that may spark some ideas of how we bring these things back, and how much time do you guys want to spend going through those?
Yeah.
But maybe you and I can talk offline.
That'd be great.
I'll have Don and Sunil join us.
And I hope you don't feel like I'm jumping
or
ambushing you or anything. I just been thinking about that ever since he talked about it. I thought, I feel like I need to go deep.
What we need to do is get the state to do priority-based budgeting. You
need to go
back and do what we're doing.
Right.
That's where over the last decade, we've been able to find all of the efficiencies and get the absolute most out of our programs, out of our staff, out of our resources, is through that process and those deep dives. That's why we've brought back and recommended we shouldn't do this program anymore. We should do this program.
Yeah,
we should reallocate. That's how we make those determinations.
That's
or
perfect.
When new programs are brought forward, we evaluate them to see how do they check the boxes, do they make sense? And we've brought some back, and after we've done that analysis, it hasn't made sense to start new programs.
Sure.
And others it has.
Can I ask?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm curious, when did we start priority-based budgeting? Because it
2016.
Yeah.
Okay, that was 2016.
I was here when we started it. I don't know if any of the rest of you were.
What year did we come in? Was it 2014?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first year we did it, we set.
Well, you would have come in.
No,
15.
You would have come in and started in 16, probably, because Jason and I started in 17. We were elected in 17. Started.
Yeah, we started. It was January 16. We started in 16.
Okay. And that's when we started prior to 16.
Yep.
I think it was 15.
15.
Pretty sure it was 15.
It was before
Monday. I feel like Mayor Oliver
or
was here.
Dave was here.
Yeah, the reason I say that is Gary got. Or Gary was put in right there. Let's see, was the end of 14 or beginning of 15? He instituted the first budget.
It was 15 because I remember I attended prior to being on the council, and so it was on 15.
It was Gary's first budget year. So
yeah.
It was
But we can definitely dive into it.
That'd be great. I'd love that.
Yeah, I think sit down one afternoon with the team.
That'd be good.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else have anything else to coordinate? Okay. Thank you. Just going over our regular meeting agenda, you know that after this we have just a brief little reception with our legislators and their families, and we'll do a recognition of them. But we were excited to have a recognition for our Special Events Professional Award presented to Natalie Domino. We know Natalie is brilliant, and we love what she does, and we're excited for that. And then a proclamation in recognition of Arbor Day, and our team is so good at that. So we got a resolution authorizing the mayor to enter into an interlocal cooperation agreement with Salt Lake County for services for the Salt Lake County Elections Division. And we're going to talk about that just briefly in here, right? And then also our CDBG public hearing that we'll have tonight too. And Mr. Shelton sent some questions on in advance. I pulled him aside and thanked him for doing that, for sending those in advance so that the team has time to work on those. And let's go. I think I'm going to ask Mr. Luce, if you will, Mr. Lewis, actually, probably Mr. Lewis, sorry, if there's anything you want to talk about this Salt Lake County election.
So you may have heard chatter about a lot of different things. Our staff's been working very diligently to work with the county to try to understand all of the numbers and things that we're getting. We only have one meeting this month, which is tonight, and our interlocal needs to be signed with the county by May. It's before we meet again. And we're still gathering a lot of information about the numbers. We'll have some discussion and presentation in the meeting tonight as we're working through that. What my recommendation would be is that we pass that resolution authorizing the mayor to sign it, but that we don't have the mayor sign it right away. That gives us more time to figure out all of the numbers and the supporting documentation, that we make sure that it's right. And then when we're comfortable and confident that those numbers are correct, we'd have the mayor sign it and turn it into the county so that we can have our support for the election this year. City Recorder Anna has done a tremendous amount of work coordinating with all of the other recorders and getting information about what they're seeing as the numbers. And we're sorting that out to make sure that everything feels right and that the numbers are correct. So
does that mean they seemed high to you too?
Well, initially we thought that, and as we dig into it and we get really deep down into the weeds, we're starting to understand how some of those calculations come about. And as we get more information and talk with people, my comfort level is getting stronger with that, if that's the right word, that we do have closer numbers. I mean, we would anticipate that there's been an increase in costs, because everything's had an increase in costs. It's making sure that those are the right
reasonable
and that it's reasonable and that we're in the right spot. But kudos to Anna. She has been on this from the very beginning and coordinating with other neighboring cities to make sure that we're all getting the right information. So I don't know if City Attorney Luce or Recorder Crookston have additional comments.
So in your packets was the original agreement. You saw that we amended yesterday. Ryan, I've been working close with Ryan on working with the county's attorney to be comfortable in the terms of the agreement, which Ryan can speak to. So for the terms of the agreement, we're comfortable. It's legal to form for Ryan. Dustin mentioned the pricing. There is an increase. I have had several conversations with the county as of even this afternoon, as Dustin stated. As he's getting more comfortable, so am I. South Jordan is actually sitting better than most entities for our pricing. Last election year, 2023, we were about $222 per voter. We're looking at about right now with just the estimate, which the estimate is inflated a bit, and the county has expressed that they are trying to capture worst case scenario. And so without knowing how many are going to be participating in primaries, how many are going to be canceling
contest altogether. It's really hard for them to gauge based off of their price where they're wanting everyone to be. So they've given us three options generally every year. They only give us one. It's here's your cost. They're finding that they've had to go back the last few years and collect large amounts of money from cities that weren't anticipating it. So that's what they're really trying to do this year, is to capture worst case for us so that we can prepare ahead of time. I've heard over and over again, is it likely that we will be paying what you see the increase is? Most likely not. But we do have to anticipate that, depending on how many have primaries and how many have general elections, how many participate in ranked choice voting, our costs are going to vary between those numbers. So as Dustin said, I've been working really close actually with strategy and budget team. Abby is a wizard at knowing these formulas and knowing where these numbers are coming from, and she's on it with us. And so we are working hard to make sure before we have the mayor sign this agreement that we are all comfortable knowing where we sit. And Ryan can talk to the terms of the agreement of where he's comfortable, knowing that the city is only going to be paying actual costs.
Yeah, it says actual costs in there, but they've got a formula, and we're trying to reverse engineer the formula, essentially. Our neighboring counties have a price per active voter, which is a voter who's voted in the last few elections, not registered, but active. And so regardless of the city in Davis County or Utah County, it's the same price. Salt Lake County has a different formula, and that's what we want a little bit more time to make sure we understand the formula. So if you vote to approve the resolution, that authorizes the mayor to sign it. And then once we're really comfortable and confident, and we're probably 89% of the way there, then mayor and we'll work through that and have it signed and turned in on time. We don't have any intent or probably capability to do it ourselves this year. And so in the long run, we know where this is going to end up. We just want to be able to understand exactly how they're coming up with their numbers. One of the things that you'll notice edited out of the agreement is all the ranked choice voting stuff. If we would have elected to do that, where I've seen no indication by the council to want to do ranked choice voting.
I know you had asked about if we needed to do anything to do.
Is there anything kind of formal we need to?
No, because we've drafted the agreement to have.
Yeah, the formality is I nuked it all out of the agreement. There's a whole lot of red lines.
Done.
Yeah. It's gone. We just told them we're not doing that.
And that makes the cost go quite a bit for the cities that opt in for that then?
Actually, no. It doesn't, because they only have one ballot at the end.
Oh, okay.
And so it just that one.
So there's
price.
No
primary. Yeah, so that's actually what's pushing some of the unknowns. If everybody, there's three columns, one is a base. If every single city did exactly what they or signed up exactly for that, then they have a base price where they're estimating how many primaries, how many generals, right? But three cities, I think, Midvale, Cottonwood Heights, and Salt Lake have pulled out and are doing ranked choice. So now there's a high participation estimate, which is a lower price, and a low participation estimate, which is a higher price. More cities that do it, the lower the price. And so that you'll see the base, the high participation, low participation, they're all in the agreement. We're right now thinking it'll probably be high participation. I know Miss Valley already passed theirs. I think Sandy did.
Sandy
was on
did.
Their agenda. And so several cities already have. And so we're just all working through it.
But if you don't have a primary, you don't have to pay that price.
The only thing we have to pay, let's say everybody runs unopposed, whoever runs, right? Then the only
that's
thing
like
we there is a cost. There is a base fee of $20,000 that's non-refundable.
Because there still are certain filings.
And one of the things throughout it says actual costs. I'm asking them what are those base fee costs that are $20,000 worth, and I'm sure they've got some invoice that'll show us. And those are things I've pushed them on.
Well, they have to mail all those ballots.
Well, they don't have to mail it if you're all running unopposed.
And I can speak to that.
They don't.
But there are
things. Anna's been running all the details.
So the $20,000, and I had a hard time at first, right, saying $20,000. Well, if I don't have to have an election, you're not keeping $20,000.
Good for you.
And I had to ask for that explanation because I was pretty strong on that point of if we don't have an election, why should we be punished, right, or penalized? Why should our residents be penalized $20,000? There is a lot of work that the county is already prepping to do, and supplies they're ordering and programming. because we can't just decide after the week of June for the candidacy declaration that we're not having an election, because we have to wait until the write-in period is over, which is September 2nd, which is far into their election prep. So they won't, we cannot cancel our election until after September 2nd if we have no one
opposed.
They've already.
So they're, yes. So they've explained that that 20,000 is due based off of our active voter count,
which is higher than Lake West Valley's,
yes.
About 4,000, even though we're
more active voters.
Yeah,
yes.
Even though we have less residents.
So they are already doing prep, and they have assured us that they will provide the itemized breakdown, but that 20,000 is going towards those prep costs that I was not considering when first seeing a non-refundable fee. But if we do hold an election, that 20,000 is put towards our final bill.
And what I put in the agreement is we just need a detailed invoice saying what it is. Fees are based on the services provided. I don't doubt that they'll be able to justify that fee and other fees, but we need to see it. That's for our accounting side. That's where we're spending our money. We need to know what we spend money on. So.
And we'll actually get to talk about this again in our regular meeting, but hopefully that provides some information. Basically, it's authorization once we're all comfortable and at a place where we're like, okay, yeah.
And that is simply because we don't have another agenda to put this on, and we had to make sure that we were in a position to have it ready to go in time.
And we apologize, we didn't have the newest version of the agreement in the packet Friday. They got back to us with their changes Friday at like 4:50 is what he sent them to me. And so Anna and I were working a little bit over the weekend. We got them back out Monday. So that's just the time it takes sometimes.
And I placed, and I'll note this in the next meeting, but in front of where you guys sit, I have already placed the red line version for you, so you guys can see what Ryan had put in and taken out in the agreement.
So the ranked choice section looks like that. Lots of lines. There are blue lines and track changes.
Thank you.
You don't have to do anything formal.
No. So the short answer to your question, we don't need to take it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, we have a couple of presentations. We're going to turn to Don Tingey to discuss a potential appointment to the Banff Creek Regional Park Authority.
All righty. The Park Authority Board had a board member, Wendy Thomas, stepped down at the end of the last year. And so we had a vacancy, and we did a recruitment for a board member. Interviewed 6 applicants, the board did, over the 2-month, January's meeting and February's meeting. And the board is recommending to the city, South Jordan City Council, as well as the County Council, Sonia Lopez. This is Sonia, and I'll let her introduce herself. So go ahead, Sonia.
Thank you, Don. Thank you all so much for your time this evening. My name is Sonia. I am a West Jordan resident. I've actually lived there for 26 years, right down the street from the park. So seeing that go up has been one of the best highlights for my neighborhood and my community, in my opinion. And getting the opportunity to come forward and be a part of it and its growth is something that I am really looking forward to hopefully having the opportunity to do. I am a working professional and a single mother, so parks are really near and dear to my family's, our core, and I've, really been able to experience a lot of the parks in the county, and so I feel like I have a lot of really good insight as to what we can bring to the west side and what can help elevate the life over there. So one thing I did also want to mention is I am bilingual. I do speak Spanish, so I feel like that also could help any community members who maybe want to express what they would like but don't know how, and, giving them a platform as well. So, I would really love this opportunity. I am very passionate about our community and getting involved. So I really just appreciate your consideration.
Sonia, thank you so much for being here and being willing to put your name in to serve in this capacity. The thing that makes our communities, and I say our communities at large here, so great is that we have good people step up and be willing to serve. So thank you for that. Does anybody have any questions for Sonia? This is an appointment that would be a county appointment. To the Banff Creek Regional Park.
So do we
board.
Vote on this, or are we just being presented with
it? We're just being presented. We're going to, we'll chat about it later.
Okay.
We're just being presented right now. But if you have any questions for Sonia, now's the time.
I'm passionate about parks as well, so thank you for your willingness and desire. Tell me, in your mind, you say you have a lot of experience in parks. What is some of your experience that you'd like to reflect on this being a regional park?
Yeah, so with it still being in the beginning stages, well, not really the beginning stages, but still having a lot more opportunity with a lot of the land still there, I feel like we have a lot of opportunity to also expand what kind of activities and amenities we can offer. Some of these suggestions that I had was including possibly an ice rink that could be a skate park in the summer, something of that sort, including additional amenities for children of all abilities, including like music type of equipment, additional music equipment, I should say. There are some little playthings there right now, but I would love to just see more of that fostered and a lot more of our community honored within the development. I am a runner who uses the trails there at the park, and I would love to see, as it develops more, maybe just the history of the city displayed, you know, where you can kind of like look at as you're running and see, oh, this is a part of the community that I'm in, and it's, you know, it's bringing that ownership and the wholesomeness that I'm really looking for. I want to feel one with my community, and I feel like just having that ability, and even with the bees coming about, you know, down the street, so to speak, it'd be really cool to have some history there, just to kind of give a broad overview and say, hey, this is our neighborhood, and this is why we're proud of it, and why we think that you all should be including it in your lives as well.
That's great. Go ahead.
Yeah. How does your professional experience lend you to be able to do well in this role?
Great question. So in my professional, in my current position, I actually work in trust and safety in the tech world. So I currently manage and handle really tough conversations between companies and their clients. And my goal is to basically just mediate it as a neutral third party and be able to find the best outcome for both individuals. And so I feel like that experience is something that I could really use the skills in this, well, to bring to this position, because it allows me to be able to take a step back, look at things from a bigger picture, and really see how this is going to come together for everyone. So I feel like that would really help me in this current role.
What's your experience with pickleball?
Great question. So I'm not sure if you guys
want to give you a clue. There is one direction that is a good direction and one that isn't.
No, I want to know honestly, because there's a lot of opportunity here.
It's absolutely.
Not, anyway, tell me your thoughts.
So my goal was to start pickleball this summer. I unfortunately have a running injury that I just obtained, so I am going to be in a boot for the next couple of months. But as soon as I am out of it, I am so ready to go and start learning. It's something that I actually really want to share with my son. And I love that that is becoming a lot more of an accessible sport, because he's really excited to do it too. He hears his friends and his family his friends' families doing these types of activities. And it just really hones in, I think, the idea of family for him. So I am super excited for it. It helps that the outfits are super cute as well. And so I'm ready. So as soon as I'm out of this boot, I would love to have a match with any one of you if you'd like to teach me and have some patience.
Well, the reason I ask isn't that you need to have a depth of experience. I just want to know, when you sit on that board, it's critical to me that the people on that board see pickleball for what it needs to be. It's accessible to all ages, all populations, all abilities, really. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, little children playing with adults. There's far, I don't know of any other sport that includes that many generations in one sport. So I very much want the people on that board to be advocating for
absolutely
more courts. And the county needs to come to the table and get enough courts that we can actually have a facility where we can have people getting their needs met. Because there's people standing in line all over the county,
yes,
waiting to play pickleball. There's not enough. So I just want to know that you're aware of that.
Yes, I am aware,
okay,
of the demand and the current need for more pickleball courts. I am 100% behind you there. I would absolutely be behind pursuing that. I've seen how the impacts on other parks have, the positive impacts that that's had at other parks. And I would absolutely love to bring that over to the west side as well, so that our community members aren't feeling like they have to travel 20 minutes to another location outside of the city to be able to get that, that really the recreation and the specialty of the sport. So
good. Good. Thank you.
Any questions? No, go ahead.
One more. Have you served in any governmental type committees or any other public service?
I have not. This
Okay. Will
be my first opportunity and first really experience coming into the official role of supporting the community, but I would absolutely love to continue expanding and helping where I can and moving more into the city council type of, well, not your guys' jobs, but more of the like the city type of, you know, questions or obstacles that I can help with there as well.
So how did you become aware that this opportunity was available?
You know, I actually follow you guys on social media, and I think I had seen a post or something go up about how you guys were looking for a board member. And so I did go through the link there, went to the website, looked at the posting, and went through the application that way. And I've just been in contact with Dawn and everyone in, you know, over the last couple of months. They've been great. And so, yeah, that's how I found it. So I really am looking forward to hopefully being able to start this this new chapter and being able to serve my community.
Great. Thank you. Thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. And again, appreciate your willingness to put your name in. It's a leap in today's world to, we've got a lot of good people willing to donate their time, but to find, it's not as easy to find people as it used to be, I'm going to dare say. Maybe in generations past, a lot of good people, but sometimes we still have to look hard for people who are willing to donate their time. So thanks for being willing to put your name in and
absolutely.
Be considered. And I feel for you with that boot situation. And I have been there.
Oh,
I've
no.
had one
That's
more than
I
once. I've had several. And I so as a former runner who was sidelined because of a running injury. Anyway, I wish you the best and hope that you heal well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I so appreciate that.
Yes.
Thank you all so much for your time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you,
Scott. It's true.
Okay. We're going to keep Mr. Tingey here at the table and invite Kyrene Gibb. I saw Kyrene here. I don't know who everybody is here who's here from Y2, but
I'll do a brief round of introductions while
okay.
we're getting the presentation pulled up. Thank
okay.
you. So with me this evening, I have Tatiana Gilchrist, my director of research. Several of you have met her before. And then we also have Drew, who is one of our interns this semester. So he worked really in depth on the report this year and did some fun pioneering with some of the AI analysis we did on open-ended responses for the survey. So we're really lucky to have Drew as part of the team and joining us this evening.
Welcome, both of you. Thanks for being here. Drew, where do you go to school?
BYU.
That was my guess.
Fair guess.
I know a professor that you Great. Might know that I came and spoke at BYU 4 recently. So yeah, anyway, thanks for being here and thanks for all your work on this. We really look forward to this every year. This survey is important to us, and we want to hear, you know, how it went. So,
yeah. Well, and I racked my brain for a bit to try to come up with a prank that would not be too terribly disruptive, but I also want to be respectful of everyone's time, so we'll get right into things. A few highlights off the bat here. Overall, residents are quite satisfied with the direction the city is heading. And quality of life in South Jordan remains high. We're at an average score of 82 on that 0 to 100 scale, pretty consistent with what we've seen in years past. And we have 52% of residents who say that they approve of the job that the city council and mayor are doing. So congratulations. We have a lot of positive reactions to the amenities that the city has to offer. Residents are especially enthusiastic about the safety, open spaces, and convenience of South Jordan. Again, pretty consistent themes with what we've seen in the past. We have 72% of residents overall saying that they believe they receive a good value or excellent value for their tax dollar. And 9 out of 10 residents say that they would recommend South Jordan as a place to live to friends and family.
And apparently they are.
And
they
apparently
keep doing
they
that.
Are.
That's been happening for a while.
Yes, it has. It's fun to drive around. Actually, when I was on my way out here, I came out through Mountain View Corridor instead just to mix things up a little bit. And it is so neat to see how the city has grown and developed over the last 10 years that we've been doing this. When we look at the responses that residents gave as to what their concerns are, both now and looking towards the future, we're still hearing growth in traffic as the number one and two things that residents are worried about and the issues that they would like to see the city continue to manage. When we look at attitudes towards the urban center development, we have more awareness than we did last year. So this has been in the public sphere a little bit longer. There's more conversation happening. And residents are excited and optimistic about the opportunities that this brings to the economy in the city. There is some concern about how this will affect traffic flow in the city, because that's already one of residents' primary concerns. And then when it comes to contacting the city, we have reached a new low proportion of residents who say that they've reached out to the city in the past year. I think this is one of the rare cases where a lower number is a positive signal, right? This is a good indicator that residents' needs are being met and they're not having to go out of their way to reach out to the city to have an issue resolved. So pretty pleased with that trend line. That's 7 percentage points lower than it was last year. And what among those residents who did reach out to contact the city, mostly it was something to do with city code enforcement issues, and that was up 15 percentage points compared to last year. So a lot of emphasis there. We only recently started tracking these specific buckets as to why residents are reaching out. So we'll take a look at that in a little bit more depth as well.
And we'll be sending an email with this presentation as well as the survey. It's all, Anna has it all queued up for you.
So every slide?
Every slide.
Thanks, Tom.
Survey methodology, usually I glaze over this very quickly, but I do want to point out just a couple things that we did differently this year. So in addition to our utilities contact information that the city provides for us to sample from, we purchased a supplemental sample from a USPS data vendor that allowed us to reach out to additional multi-unit households and some of those addresses that are less likely to be reflected at the individual residence level in the utilities database. So we're trying to expand that coverage of renters and younger residents a little bit. Still struggling in the response rate among those folks relative to the rest of the city, but we did see a significant uptake in younger respondents and renters compared to years past. So we're—
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yes.
Is that a good sign? In my mind, I think if people, of course, if they're willing to take the time to fill out the survey, that's what we want. But if people are like, yeah, I don't need to do that, do you think it's because they have less concern that they're like, man, I'm not really stressed out about what's going, or are they just not interested in taking the time?
It's difficult to say. Essentially, you're describing non-response bias, and the problem with non-response bias is that these folks aren't responding, so we don't know what their motivations are, whether they are systematically different from those folks who choose to respond to our survey invitations. I will say that when we reach out initially, that first wave of responses who receive an email and immediately take the survey tend to be those folks who are either incredibly enthusiastic or incredibly disgruntled, right? We hear from the polarized ends of the spectrum first, and then as we send reminder invitations or follow-ups, we tend to get more of those folks that are a little bit more moderated in their perspectives. So that would suggest that perhaps those people who decline to respond at all are more similar to those folks that take some additional prodding than those folks who respond initially. So I think it's a fair hypothesis that those who aren't responding to our survey invitations don't have a bone to pick with the city right now. So that's, yeah, not necessarily a bad thing, but that's a little bit of speculation as well. So we sent out emails and text message invitations to our selected residences this year. We had a total of 1,819 residents begin the survey or respond to our invitations, and a total of 1,035 of them completed the survey. So really positive panel refresh rate here. This gives us a really good foundation for the next couple years before we go back out and refresh the panel again. But it's important to note that when we're looking at a panel refresh sample, and you'll see this in some of the trend lines in the data, every year that we have pulled in a new group of residents, we tend to see a slight dip in some of the metrics because we are reaching out to people who we haven't talked to before, we might be getting folks who are newer, who have less experience with the city. We might be getting folks who are just less familiar or less engaged overall because they haven't been in this panel in years past. So we'll see some of that in the trend lines. Most of it is statistical noise, but we'll talk as we go through. As always, the data have been weighted to reflect the demographics of the city as a whole, and we have a margin of error of about 3 percentage points around all of our aggregated estimates. This is a quick look at the geographic distribution of our respondents. You can see we have good coverage across all 5 council districts, so happy with that. And let's get into the fun stuff. So in total, we have 60% of residents who say that the city is headed in the right direction, just 10% of residents who say that the city is headed in the wrong direction. We do have a larger share of residents this year who are unsure. Again, that tends to happen when we refresh the panel and we're bringing some new people in to this public opinion exercise. But when we look at those trend lines over time and we take out that don't know category and reapportion the percentages, you can see we're right in line with where we've been in years past and actually a little bit higher than we were in 2023 and 2024, with 86% of residents who express an opinion saying the city is headed in the right direction. Overall quality of life remains high with an average of 82 on the 0 to 100 scale. I love coming to South Jordan and being able to brag to all of you that you have one of the highest quality of life ratings that I see among the clients we survey. So again, really positive indicators here and really high scores across all council districts as well. So we don't have a single council district where the quality of life rating is below 80 on that 0 to 100 scale. Really, really high marks here across the board. When we look at approval ratings for the elected officials in the city, a total of 52% say that they approve of the job you all are doing. We have a really large neither don't know enough response category here. Again, that is more common in years when we refresh the panel. One of the fun side effects, I think, of having this panel data set to go back to and having these residents who opt in is that we do sort of see an increase in engagement as residents are invited to participate in the panel over time. So hopefully next year we see that don't know enough category shrink a little bit and we're seeing more residents get engaged and express an opinion.
If I can point out, it's interesting to me that they don't know enough. The smallest number is in Tamara's district, which I would have expected would have been flipped because they are the newest residents in the city. That's really interesting.
Remember we talked about this last year.
Yeah.
And you're gonna see some of that that switch now.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And
so last year it seemed that I was one of the lower ones.
Right.
So I was expecting to be like, oh yeah, here it comes.
Well, the ones that know the least or maybe say, I don't have as much opinion, I don't know as much. I would expect that to be the highest.
And the panel refresh, I think, helped reset the base.
Yeah, that's just interesting.
Yeah, I was looking at the same thing there.
When we look at residents' attitudes over time, we have a majority of residents who say that the city is somewhat better or about the same as it was 5 years ago. I have to just consistently remind everyone that when we have a stable quality of life rating, when we have such a large share of residents expressing that the city is headed in the right direction, about the same as 5 years ago is also a really positive response on this scale. So I want to make sure that that's taken into consideration here. So in total, we have 29% of residents who say things have improved, but again, more than half of residents feel that things are at least the same as they were 5 years ago. And we have 1 in 5 residents this year who say they don't know, haven't lived here long enough to make that comparison. So again, that panel refresh sort of increasing the share of residents who are newer to the city, which is helpful. You can see the comparisons over time here as well. Our responses as to whether the city has gotten better or has stayed the same are sort of crisscrossing one another when we do panel refresh years. So you can see some of the interesting ups and downs, but overall high marks on the trend lines here. Only 1 in 5 residents saying that things have gotten some degree worse, And that's been pretty consistent as well. When we ask residents what they like most about living in the city, it comes down to safety and the sense of community that they have here. Again, convenience, all of the things that are so close by are accessible in South Jordan, including recreational amenities, commercial activities. All of the things that residents need are really within reach. And then there are a lot of positive comments about the aesthetics of the city as well. It's a very clean, peaceful, pretty place to live. We ask residents once again how they rate the service they receive for the tax dollar they pay to the city. And overall, we have 72% of residents who say that it is excellent or good. Statistically, there's no change from 2024 here. That one percentage point change is statistical noise. But we do have a larger share of residents in District 4 expressing that their tax dollar value is better than it was, or is excellent or good compared to 2024. So quite the increase there.
So interesting, maybe just because some of them have had a chance to live here now for a year and have more information, who knows?
When we ask residents how likely they are to recommend South Jordan to friends and family as a good place to live, we are looking at a basic ceiling effect here. 9 out of 10 respondents say that they are likely to recommend, and 60% say they're very likely to recommend. This is also pretty consistent across council districts. Residents are really proud to live in South Jordan, and they want everyone to know about it, which means your growth probably isn't going to stop anytime soon. Looking at residents' attitudes towards some of the city priority initiatives, we have overall some consistency with what we've seen in years past. Residents feel the city is doing an excellent or good job creating accessible recreation, providing opportunities to participate in city events, and providing a safe community at the top of the list here. Just over a third of residents rate the city's performance in that regard as excellent, but again, about 3 out of 4 expressing an excellent or good rating there. Really positive across the board. When it comes to things that are a little bit lower this year, or lower in terms of the hierarchy of all of these initiatives, developing reliable utilities and transportation has seen a dip compared to last year's rating. We do still have 22% of residents who rate the city's performance there as excellent, but when we're talking about transportation and residents are constantly looking at a new UDOT project or a new road improvement project, I'm not surprised to see that shift a little bit. And then planning for the long-term growth of the city is the one that we typically see at the bottom of the list here. And again, I don't know how much more the city can do to communicate the plans that it has for the long-term growth of the city. I think there's more of an awareness problem here than an actual lack of planning or a poor reflection on the city's performance there.
I'll be interested to see if after 9800 South and Bangor Highway opens, people are so over it. All of that, right? And they're not rerouted and they can drive, and 13th West is done and the sewer project is done. And
But then there will just be something.
There might be, but it would be nice if we had a year where people were like, I can get through this city, and the numbers would go up because they'd be like, you open the roads, you know?
We saw that better. When 114 opened up, we saw better. And then when 104, we saw the better. And the word traffic flow showed up more this year. Usually it's just been traffic, yada, yada. This year it's the traffic flow was a very consistent term in the verbatim comments.
Yeah,
it was.
Oh, east-west traffic in this city is.
Well, that's all we
just
are.
Just a train wreck.
And then having so many things under construction right now just makes it even harder. But that's not an anomaly. We have that a lot. That keeps happening project after project. But I'll be interested to see if after some of those wrap up, if we see a boost. I wouldn't be surprised.
You throw 90th in there too. 90th's been under construction.
Yeah.
And it opened up today, a little bit better.
So you can see here, looking at the trend lines, again, we tend to see a little bit of a dip in ratings when we go back and refresh the panel, but we're not outside the realm of statistical normalcy compared to years prior. Overall, pretty consistent movement across the board, so we don't see any one of these priority areas with a steeper decline than the rest, which again suggests that this is more a function of our refreshed panel and the sample changes than an overall attitude shift among our population for one area or another. Looking at residents' perceptions of the most important issues in the city, again, growth, traffic, infrastructure, housing, all of the things that I think we've become very used to seeing.
Yes. And I'm assuming the size of the word obviously reflects on
yes,
the number of people.
That
and that's
correct.
Very accurate. I mean, this is a cute graphic, but it's very accurate. As
yes.
Far as
so
the last
sizing,
one had safe. This
yep,
one has growth.
Yeah. Okay. The sizing is scaled directly in proportion to the number of times that it is mentioned in those open-ended comments.
You just articulated that beautifully.
Yes. Thank you. So again, overall, really consistent themes here for current important issues and for issues looking into the future. Growth,
so many
traffic,
don't
that you don't control that.
Who do not understand the difference of what they're paying for. They think that money's coming to us. They don't feel like they're getting a good value. They're being overcharged.
It was a heavier response this year than I've ever seen before, that I've noticed.
Because there were some big bumps in Daybreak's HOA fees, which has nothing to do with the city.
Right.
There's been a significant
but they want you to do something about
of
it.
Social
that's,
media posts
that's
to not understanding any
yeah,
sort of difference.
Call me.
Yeah.
I hear it.
Well, and I think that's
they start wanting us to take it over.
That's also related to incorporating more renters and newer residents into the sample is because, you know, maybe those HOA fees are less familiar to them. The administrators of those HOA fees are going to be less familiar, and they're just looking for a channel to express their frustrations. So
well, that's what growth and continued rising taxes probably reflects, because we don't have rising taxes. That's not a thing. Not here in the city, for
right,
the city. So some of this, I wonder how much of it, too, ties back. Hopefully, most people are looking through a local lens, but I think across the board, most people are looking through a more federal lens and a
oh, yeah, and the
state increase and all the
board,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's a lot that plays into this
well,
kind
their,
of thing.
Their property
just their
taxes
bill,
are going
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
the total
yeah,
bill.
So
is
they
going
were
up,
the we they bent
yeah,
on us.
Overflowing schools right now we don't have, or you know so
yep,
yeah.
We asked residents to rank some of the things that might affect their quality of life in the city, and categorize them as either the most important or the least important. So they were allowed to select two, one as the most important and one as the least important. You can see we have some pretty clear patterns here. Traffic flow is indicated as the most common, most important factor in residents' quality of life. Safety coming in second to traffic flow, I think, is notable. And then quality of life overall as just something they would like to see the city address comes in at 17% of residents saying that that's the most important thing to them is a holistic view on quality of life in the city. Infrastructure rounding out the top tier of items that are more frequently selected as the most important aspect or issue for the city to address. Things that are least important to a large share of residents. Public transit is most commonly selected as the least important factor, which you would think.
They don't want to come.
That is.
You would think it would be intuitive, but it's not. Cognitive dissonance within our survey results is common and fun to see illustrated this starkly. So public transit, not a high priority. Traffic flow, very high priority. And then housing options is our other most frequently selected least important priority, despite residents' concerns in a lot of the open ends and other areas where we've heard housing affordability is such a key issue. So some interesting...
My guess is it's because most of the folks who answered that have somewhere to live. They already live here.
There is that.
So...
That's true.
And I think a little bit of this is also housing options becomes the vehicle for residents to say, we don't want more density, we don't want more apartments, we don't want to see that growth. So saying that housing options is a less important priority to them, something they don't want the city to address, I think is just a reflection of that priority specifically. When we look at our city service ratings overall here, really positive scores across the board. pretty consistent at the top of the list. We have fire and emergency medical services and garbage collection, city parks, police, community events, outdoor recreation, and culinary water, sort of rounding out the top tier. Mulligan's coming in at 76 there on that 0 to 100 scale for satisfaction rating. Again, really positive scores overall. There isn't a lot of room to go up on a 0 to 100 scale once we are at that 85 mark, so really good news. The things that are at the bottom of the list here, also fairly consistent over time. Water conservation, city code enforcement, and planning, zoning, and building services being those things that come into our mid to low 60 ratings.
I have a question.
Yes.
Are these the exact words that you had on the survey? So they could say, how happy am I with fire and emergency medical? I mean, was this the term?
I believe so.
Yes.
I think
so. They didn't
sometimes
come up with
their own. No. No, sometimes we have to shorten them for the visual, but in this case, I think all of these are word for word what was presented in the survey for service ratings.
Okay, thank you.
And there were no snowstorms this year during the survey period. That's why snow this year.
Yes.
You can tell if there was snow on the ground.
Yes.
Yeah, service maintenance.
Last year, snowplow got dinged because we had.
Yeah, because we had a couple big storms while the survey was in the field.
Yeah.
So you can see here our service ratings over time, largely very consistent if we look away from the dip in the recycling ratings in 2020. But that has rebounded fully at this point. So we're back in line with all the rest of the city services for the recycling program's service ratings.
Oh, we did all kinds of crazy
things. Changed the rate.
It's under new management. It's like our new manager.
Jason did it all.
Jason, we know.
Good answer.
I'm the new manager.
Good answer, Jason.
I wasn't going to say my own name. Just to point out, we improved.
Oh, so that's your mark.
We still promoted him, though. Look where he is.
You think he has somewhere
like
else to put him?
Right? Well, that's true.
When we look at services aggregated by departments and look at the average ratings, again, a lot of consistency over time. Really positive indicators here of satisfaction with city services writ large. Looking at some of residents' comments about their experiences with city services in the past year, a lot of positive things to say. Fire service and police are great. Security and safety of the parks has improved. Thank you. And then there are concerns about road maintenance, as I think we would expect to see. And then also some frustrations around growth and development sort of being fronted on to the planning department, and I will just forever say I'm sorry to our city planners who get to be the scapegoats for residents' attitudes about growth. Looking at attitudes towards the urban center development, first of all, we've increased in awareness by about 5 percentage points compared to last year, so 80% of residents have heard about Downtown Daybreak's development. When we ask residents in their own words what concerns, if any, they have with the development, it mostly hinges on traffic. Residents are worried about more people coming through, more cars on the roads, more congestion as a result of the Downtown Daybreak development. There are related concerns about parking, just the number of people in an already busy area, population growth generally. And then there are some concerns about public transit options, which I think is funny when we're looking at residents thinking about others coming into the city, public transportation is a high priority. Less so for their own commutes, but when we're looking at people coming and going.
So funny. Let them take it, but I don't want to.
Precisely.
Well, it is out in Daybreak.
When we look at the areas that residents expect to be affected in a positive, negative, or neutral way by the urban center development in Daybreak, the economic opportunity is the area where residents are the most optimistic. They believe it will have a very positive impact on the city's economy. Public transit residents also believe that it will be positively affected. And overall quality of life, we have 59% of residents who believe that Downtown Daybreak will have at least a somewhat positive influence on their overall quality of life in the city. And a majority of residents indicating that they think it will be good for infrastructure in South Jordan. The one area where we have an overwhelming majority of residents expressing some concerns is traffic flow.
I have a question.
Yes.
These questions that are specific to the urban center, do we have a plan as a city to share these with the Larry H. Miller Group?
We have
shared them already. Because they should absolutely have this right in front of their faces.
Yeah.
Good. Thank
it's
you.
It's been part of our discussions.
Good. Not a lot of shift over time in terms of whether residents believe that these aspects of life in the city will be positively or negatively impacted. So pretty consistent attitudes here. Really the only area where we've seen a shift is fewer residents believe that safety will be positively impacted by the downtown Daybreak development. Looking at communications with the city and from the city, residents' most preferred source of information and the way that they receive the most information from the city of South Jordan are pretty well matched overall. Direct emails from the city are meeting residents' needs for the most part there. We only have about a 4 percentage point opportunity gap from those residents who would prefer to receive emails from the city. So I think that is largely reflective of some of our new panelists as well. So an opportunity there to increase that reach just a bit. And then city newsletters in digital format, again, really meeting residents' needs. The share of residents who are currently utilizing that as their primary source of information matches really well with the share of residents who would prefer that to be their primary source of information. Print format, we have more residents who are currently relying on it than who would prefer it as their first source of information, but overall pretty positive reflections here. The area where there's the largest opportunity gap for communications is when it comes to text messages from the city. We have about twice as many residents who say that they would be interested in receiving information from the city that way than are currently receiving information from the city that way.
If they would opt into it, we'd be happy to send, because we can't send it without them self-selecting to opt in.
That was going to be my question. Yeah. What portion of our city has selected in? Do we know? Like if you were to give us a guess?
I have a
couple of. That could be something we could start promoting more.
And we have. It's been pushed a lot in the newsletter and on social media a lot. It's out there a lot, telling people to opt in.
Yeah, in terms of our SMS contacts, it's definitely nowhere near. So we have about 26,000 just general like city contacts. These are emails. They have to have an email associated with it. In terms of SMS or text messaging, let's see if we can get me a total. It's only a fraction of that. Probably about 5,000 between all of our various lists. So. Thank you.
The other piece that I would just point to here is that the city's social media accounts have precise parity with the share of residents who currently rely on those accounts and those who would prefer to rely on the city's social media accounts. So meeting needs well here, despite being lower on the overall ranking for social media in terms of being a primary communication source. Overall, residents would like to hear from the city most often once a month. That seems like a good cadence for the majority of respondents, although we have about 1 in 4 residents who would like to hear from the city more often and receive emails a few times a month. When we ask residents how useful the communication they receive is, we have majority positive attitudes there. 91% of residents say that the information they receive through city communications is at least somewhat useful. Really positive marks there. And overall, residents feel that the cadence from which they're receiving communication from the city is positive there. We asked residents what tasks, if any, they have gone to the city website to complete. We have about 3 out of 4 residents who say they've gone to the website to pay their utility bills, just shy of half who have gone to the website to connect their utilities, and about 1/3 who say that they've registered for a city program. After that, significantly smaller shares of residents going to the website for these other tasks. But I will point out, only about 1 in 10 residents say that they've never done any of these activities on the city website. So there's some good traffic flow there to the city website overall. And most residents feel that the ability to complete those tasks or their experience completing those tasks was positive. We have majority excellent ratings for garbage can repair requests, ordering a neighborhood dumpster, paying utility bills, and then just shy of half of residents saying that their experience getting a dog license or connecting utilities on the city website was excellent.
Just chime in. Do you mind, Mayor?
Yeah, go ahead.
On the report problem, the thing I've heard is this usually happens on Fridays in the afternoon. You know, when I hear issues where they're trying to report a problem and they're having trouble getting in touch with people. Any thoughts? That's when I hear about it, is on Fridays, in Friday afternoons, typically.
Patrick, do you have any sense of, like, if it's something that needs to be immediately responded to or what they're contacting the city for?
Typically what I find is it's usually someone that's older and they don't know why they can't get in touch with anyone on a Friday later on. And even though it's on our website, they might not have gone through the website to see everything, but that's where I've seen usually the issues.
Like issues that need immediate to address or just an inconvenience?
They think we're just not available to answer. It's not that their issue itself is urgent. And sometimes they are, but they just think it's like, why can I not get a hold of anyone? And so that's an issue that has been brought to my attention on a couple occasions.
We also asked residents what, if any, South Jordan social media accounts they were following. We have just shy of a third of residents who say they follow the city on Facebook, 14% who follow the city on Instagram, just 5% who are following on X, and just over two-thirds of residents who say they don't follow any of the city's social media accounts. I think that is a particularly surprising rate for us, and we looked into it. There are a wide swath of residents in that none of the above category, ranging from some of our younger, newer residents who are not yet plugged in with the city, to our older residents who are less inclined to be active on social media and connect with the city that way, who would prefer to stick to the city emails and newsletters that we saw at the top of the list of communication sources. But I will note again that those residents who do prefer to receive their information through social media accounts are having those needs met. Overall perceptions and the opportunity gap there isn't one. Residents are receiving the information they need if that's the channel they choose to go to. Overall ratings of the city social media accounts among those who do follow one or more are largely positive. Really, Instagram is the only area where we have residents saying that posts are not very or not at all useful. And sometimes Instagram is meant to just be entertaining. So I don't see that as a particularly negative score, if I'm honest.
I agree with that because we have the most positive engagement from Instagram. This is tracked very carefully, very closely. So, yeah.
We also asked residents a few questions about the city leisure guide. We have 78% of residents who are aware of it, who recall receiving it in the mail. Overall, a majority of residents feel it's at least somewhat valuable. And we have 41% of residents who would like to receive or who use the information from that leisure guide multiple times a year. About just shy of half who use it multiple times a year or more often.
It's interesting that the user guide, the leisure guide value, not very valuable or not at all valuable, is only 17% when 22% said they weren't even aware of it.
These are among those folks who indicate awareness. So if they were not...
Of the 78%.
Yes, of that 78%.
Okay.
Yep. Again, our rate of contacting the city among residents is at an all-time low this year, with just 31% of residents reaching out to a city office. 62% of those residents were able to have their request or question answered on the first contact. And public works, utility billing, and police services are the most common common reasons for reaching out to the city. Some of the other responses include animal control, street light or sign issues, and Christmas tree pickup.
looking at the past few years that we have tracked those things, the one area where we've seen a significant increase is residents reaching out for code enforcement issues. Overall, residents are aware of a variety of contact methods, but about one third of residents say that they aren't aware of any of the channels they can use to reach out to the city. Fascinating to me. But when it comes to the channels that residents are using, we most often have residents saying that they're calling the city, reaching out, not through some of these other lines or opportunities to report a problem, but calling the city directly. And overall, 83% of residents say that they were treated with courtesy and professionalism when they contacted the city. So pretty positive rating there, lower than we've had in recent years, but again, in a panel refresh year, with a larger share of newer residents and renters, I'm not surprised or concerned by that number. That concludes our whirlwind tour for this year. I know you have a hard stop in about 4 minutes, so if you have any short questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, we can follow up via email.
Thank you. Any questions for Kyrene or the team here from Y2?
I guess just at a high level, given what you have seen here, what do you think we ought to work on?
Traffic flow?
I think traffic can slow it down more.
If you can solve traffic, that's great. I think the most
or state roads.
Right. I think the area for the most opportunity is in communicating the city's long-term vision with residents. I think that's the area where, when it comes to concerns about growth and traffic, knowing that the city is proactively working to manage these things despite the current pain points is, in a lot of ways, all you can do. So that would be the area that I would point to, is especially when we're looking at some of those newer residents and finding ways to reach out and communicate that long-term vision, the city's plans to mitigate some of these growing pains that they're feeling. I think that's going to go a long way. Thank you for your time.
Thank
folks.
You, Kyrene, Drew, Tatiana. Thank you all so much for being here. We love having babies here and need
yes.
more of that. So you are welcome to come anytime.
She has never made more sound.
Oh, shit. It's music.
We love it.
Good. Future council member.
Yeah.
So we'll have an email to you. We'll have these presentations. It'll have the survey in it. It has the verbatim responses in it. There's one or two other documents that are associated. Oh, there's a council, the survey by council district, so that you can look at the results for your specific council, your specific district.
If I could ask a really quick one. At the very beginning, you had your little dots across the map, and you said we have good respondents from all across. Was there a percentage? I'm just curious, because mine is the new growth area.
The percentages for each district are right around 20%.
Okay, so it's pretty...
It's pretty evenly distributed, yeah. We had somewhere between 180 and, I think, 230 respondents per district.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, just a comment. I mean, we go through a lot of expense to do the survey, and I'd like for city staff to, you know, go through and if they see any opportunities to maybe come back and report to council at another time to say, hey, here's some things that we identified that, you know, we might do and because of this. So,
yeah.
And to that point, her suggestion was great. Like, how are we communicating our long-term vision? We have a vision. We have plans.
Yeah,
we know what's coming.
Quality of life and long-term planning all the time, but consistently year after year.
It's hard to get the message out.
Yeah.
I'd say Rachel probably is the most involved. She's very involved in it. Some of these questions were tailored so that she could have that strategic direction, and you can see it in some of the things that she's doing because she's looking at longitudinally. We kind of honed in on this, and so yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn so we can go to our legislative social in the council chamber lobby, which is all set up and ready to go.
So moved.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.